It's a normal sunny Saturday on the farm for Lynn Meisner, but her daily routine of feeding and caring for her sheep, hogs, and chickens is not without a few surprises, especially with a herd of pregnant sheep running around.
Looks like we have a brand new baby there. It wasn't there when I came out here before. Oh, twins. Oh my goodness, twins.
My name's Lynn Meisner. I live in Palisade, Minnesota. I have a farm here. I raise mostly grass-fed meat, lamb, beef, and then I raise poultry on pasture and some hogs. And I sell free-range eggs at the local co-op in Crow Wing County. And last year I participated in the farmer's market in Aiken, so I have a high tunnel. I grow vegetables and have about 2.5 acres of vegetable garden. So it's a busy place, and we provide a lot of food to our community.
It's easy to relax into the steady hum of Meisner's farm. And being there for a few hours, I almost forgot about the world outside. And I can see how Meisner might have too, and how jarring it must have been just a few years ago when a surprise visitor walked onto the farm and changed everything.
Well, I was out here one day in January, I believe it was 2 years ago. I was just outside and a truck pulled in and a gentleman got out and said, I'm from Enbridge, and we're going to build a pipeline right through your farm. And I was like, oh, no, you're not.
At first glance, the new pipeline, which Enbridge calls the Sandpiper, might not seem like such a big deal. The company would come in, build a pipeline underground through the corner of the property, and that's that. But for Meisner's farm, they had much more in store.
The pipeline would go across, see where that big oak tree is there?
Yeah.
Right across the field, right across, all the way across here, and then go into the river, under the river down where you drove into the farm.
The route Enbridge originally proposed would essentially cut straight through the middle of her property. Luckily, through multiple conversations with Enbridge, Meisner was able to convince the company to reroute their proposed corridor around her farm. But she's still worried about potential impacts of the pipeline to her neighbors and the place she calls home. Her farm in Palisade is located about 75 miles west of Duluth, and the surrounding area is mostly wetland and home to a wide variety of plants and wildlife. It's the grass and soil of this area that not only fuels her farm, but her livelihood as well.
This little river here is the Willow River, and it goes right in, dumps right into the Mississippi just around the corner. If there is a spill in this area, it'll be really difficult to access it for cleanup because of the wet soils. In the winter, it's snowy and can be frozen, but it's still very inaccessible, and in the summer, virtually impossible. So if there is a spill in the summertime, they wouldn't be able to get heavy equipment in there to clean it up, and I think it would be a major disaster.
Meisner isn't alone in her concerns. At the same time she was discovering Enbridge's plans, in nearby Carlton County, landowners were getting the news of the proposal as well. Craig Sturley is a retired DNR forester in Carlton County and a member of the Carlton County Land Stewards.
I was pretty stunned. I can't tell you how many hours of sleep we lost thinking about this possibility of a pipeline and hazardous materials corridor in our backyard. You know, first thing that goes through your head is, you know, you want to sell and get out of here before that happens. In fact, unfortunately for one of my neighbors, east of me, he was in the process of selling his home. They were about a week from signing the final papers, and when they got the notice, the whole deal, real estate deal, fell apart.
Another major concern for Sturley is that if Enbridge settles on routing the Sandpiper pipeline through his property, whether he wanted it or not, the company could come in and claim the property anyway through a Minnesota statute called eminent domain. Basically, eminent domain works like this. According to Minnesota law, the government retains the right to take private property for public use. In return, they are to provide just compensation to the landowner. Again, Lynn Meisner.
It's really all based on the need, determining the need. The oil companies made a proposal that they were providing a public service just like an electric utility, and so they should be given the same rights of eminent domain as a other utility. But the difference is, to me, they're a privately held corporation. They don't have any interest in the welfare of Minnesotans. They're there to make money. The oil is going right through Minnesota. It's not coming to Minnesota. I think what started out giving me a kind of a sick feeling about all this was the attitude of, you can't do anything about this.
So, one by one, as more people along the proposed pipeline route became aware of what was happening, those with concerns decided it was time to do something.
This was pretty earth-shaking. So we just decided we had to try to fight this.
Enbridge is an energy distribution and transportation company headquartered in Calgary, Alberta. Its proposed Sandpiper Pipeline is a 616-mile pipeline made up of two parts. The first section, 24 inches in diameter, would run from Tioga, North Dakota to Clearbrook, Minnesota. From there, the second segment, 30 inches in diameter, would run from Clearbrook to Superior, Wisconsin. Enbridge already has 1,887 miles of pipe through Minnesota, including the Alberta Clipper, Southern Lights, and Line 3 projects. So why do they need another pipeline? I'll get to that, but first, some background. And you can't talk about the pipelines and pipeline impacts without hearing this word.
Kalamazoo
in Michigan.
The Kalamazoo is a river in western Michigan, and in 2010, it made national news as the site of the largest and most expensive inland oil spill in U.S. history.
My name is Paul Stolen. I'm a retired government employee. I had a number of positions in government with the Minnesota DNR, Montana DNR, Minnesota Legislature, State Planning Agency. During my career in government, I worked on probably about 12 pipelines as a regulator. The Enbridge rupture in Michigan, the cost so far is $1.2 billion, with a B, and that river is not cleaned up. It was a very egregious accident, very egregious mismanagement. 17 hours it kept pumping oil.
Besides the size of the spill, the Kalamazoo incident was notable because it was one of the first instances in which oil sands oil was spilled on a large scale. Oil sands oil is different from the light crude oil most people are familiar with. Originating in the so-called oil sands of Alberta, Canada, this oil is much, much heavier and thicker in consistency. When the company went to clean up the spill in Michigan, they encountered a new, very serious problem. Rather than floating on the surface of the water, oil sands oil sinks to the bottom, making it almost impossible to clean up. And unfortunately, this 2010 spill wasn't the first time Enbridge had issues with their pipelines.
Minnesota's has a lot of pipelines because we're in between oil-producing areas in Canada and Montana and North Dakota and the places where the refineries are. The Clearbrook Terminal, which is just about 25 miles from where I live, is one of the biggest oil junctures in the United States. And then they proposed a route south of Clearbrook down to Park Rapids and then east to Superior. And there had been a Mincan pipeline built there and I was a regulator on that. And that was a real, very problematic corridor. All kinds of problems when they built Mincan. And so I knew that was a bad route right away.
To clarify, opponents say the reason this corridor is problematic is because of the terrain. When you look at a map of the proposed Sandpiper route laid across a map of Minnesota, you see that it traverses very hilly country and one of the most heavily lake-populated areas of the state, much like the Mincan pipeline Stolen mentions.
And they use drilling mud to make a borehole, and they usually go under the rivers, maybe 25, 30 feet under the river. When you go through groundwater emergence areas, sometimes you have frackouts where the drilling mud follows, gets to the surface, and so you can have potential drilling mud release into the river. And that happened in many locations along the Mincan route, more than I'd ever seen before.
While it's easy to see the downsides of the proposed project, Enbridge argues that we need this oil, and they're not entirely off base. When it comes to oil consumption, we surpass every other country on the planet by a long shot. Even as more and more people are making smarter decisions about energy use, and our cars are becoming more and more efficient. Here's Lorraine Little, Senior Officer of U.S. Public Affairs for Enbridge.
As many folks may be aware, there is an oil boom that's been taking place in North Dakota over the last several years. And unfortunately, the pipeline infrastructure in North Dakota hasn't been able to keep pace with that rapid growth. So what's happened is a majority of the oil is actually moving out of the Bakken on trains. And so that's created sort of a myriad of other problems that you see in the news frequently with different rail incidents, but also, there have been other comments or other incidents related to the farming community. For example, last year, the egg community reported about $100 million in losses because they weren't able to get their crops to market because the trains are all taking care of the oil and moving oil to market. And so the Sandpiper pipeline is really about helping to alleviate that strain on the transportation infrastructure by putting oil into the safest, most efficient transportation method.
The rail incidents Little is referring to are exploding oil trains. Several oil trains containing Bakken crude have exploded en route to refineries. The deadliest was the 2013 Lac-Mégantic disaster, which killed 47 people in a tiny Canadian town. Pipeline supporters say it's safer to move crude to market via underground pipes than with chugging locomotives. They also say a new pipeline would bring jobs.
We would anticipate in Minnesota alone that Sandpiper would mean about 1,500 construction jobs. And so with that, then that also creates economic spinoff for the communities that Sandpiper traverses through. But then once Sandpiper goes into service, the state of Minnesota would see an increase in property tax revenue, and we would anticipate that Sandpiper, in its first year of operation, that we would pay about $25 million per year once it goes into service.
This brings us back to a central question. Why does Enbridge want this route in particular? Why not route the Sandpiper through an area that's more flat, with less opposition from landowners? Friends of the Headwaters, an organization currently working to change the route of the pipeline, decided, hey, let's give them some alternatives. Here's Richard Smith, president of Friends of the Headwaters.
Why are we jeopardizing all of the water resources of, the best water resources of the state of Minnesota by just making a little deviation here or there in the route? Maybe there's a better way to do this. If we are going to put a new energy corridor across the state, why don't we put that energy corridor in a part of the state that has the lowest risk environmentally? So Friends of the Headwaters suggested alternative routes that did just that. And not only do we look at the natural resource maps of the state of Minnesota for where that might be, but we also considered, if we are going to do this, why don't we look at to see if there's any other existing pipeline corridors that are outside of Minnesota's lake country. Initially, the Department of Commerce wasn't quite sure what to do with that. Initially, they rejected the system alternatives. I mean, they kept them, but we were told at a meeting that, well, you guys don't end in Superior. You have to end in Superior. And we said, why do we have to end in Superior? The oil's going to Illinois. Why don't we just go straight to Illinois in an existing pipeline corridor? One, so we're not disturbing new ground. Two, we're not putting more pipes up in the lake country. Three, that's where they want the oil anyway.
Enbridge disagrees.
We believe that the route that we proposed is really, on balance, the best for Minnesota. It's the shortest route. It follows existing pipelines and transmission lines, and it impacts fewer landowners in high population areas. It also affects fewer miles of natural resources.
In interviews, Enbridge has warned that these alternative routes would be cost prohibitive. Some of the landowners and stakeholders have their own theories as to why the company is adamant about their preferred route.
There's a small company in Superior, Wisconsin, that has applied to the state of Wisconsin to improve their dock frontage in the port of Superior Duluth. Calumet is the name of the refinery there. It's another company that has applied for this permit. when we have asked Enbridge, you know, are there plans to ship oil down the Great Lakes in, by barge or ship, you know, no, we don't know anything about that. We don't have anything to do with that. Meanwhile, here's this company applying for a permit to, why would you want to improve your dock frontage if in your an oil industry related company, unless that would be your, I would think that, unless that's your plan.
Here's Craig Sturley. He's the retired DNR forester we heard from earlier. He's opposed to the pipeline.
There's some built-in economic incentive here for the route to go through those two locations so that Enbridge gets some additional payment for the delivery to those two points. If those two points aren't there, if their oil is going to go directly from the Bakken to Chicago, that kind of waylays that some of that economic incentive that's built into the plan.
There's some debate about whether or not Minnesota actually needs this oil. According to a Minnesota legislative brief from 2013, Minnesota's refineries cannot absorb additional crude supplies, meaning that Enbridge would look to move this oil elsewhere to other refineries with the capacity to do so. In short, while the project's construction would bring short-term economic benefits to the region, the oil wouldn't end up in Minnesota at all. Currently, Enbridge is only in the permitting process of the pipeline. They'll need to get approval from the state of Minnesota for the project before they move forward. The first step is to get a certificate of need. Smith and the others who oppose the current route for the pipeline say the permitting process itself is actually part of the problem.
It really is backwards, the way this all happens. Really, even before the company files an official application with the state, they're already out buying up easements from landowners. You know, like I mentioned earlier, they filed an application with the state for the Line 3 replacement or rebuild project. Well, we know for a fact that they've been purchasing easements on that for about 6 months now. So what happens is the company gets to frame how all of this happens. What happened here, because of the number of questions that we entered into the process and the concerns stated by state agencies and also outside environmental experts that groups in opposition to the pipeline presented, the commission did something they hadn't done in a long time, if at all. They bifurcated the permit process. They have postponed the route permit and have just proceeded with the certificate of need.
Smith isn't the only one concerned about the lack of an EIS, or Environmental Impact Statement, for the Sandpiper project. Here's Paul Stolen again. He's a retired pipeline regulator we heard from earlier. He's opposed to the current pipeline route.
There's been no environmental impact statement. None whatsoever. Any other project of this magnitude, it would be a no-brainer. Absolutely, an environmental impact statement would be done. That all the insiders in government, Pollution Control Agency, the DNR, the Department of Commerce that handles pipelines, all know that this is a very messed up system. The regulations are a mess, and the public should know that. And the people that are doing this don't have very good answers.
More than just landowners live along the proposed Sandpiper route. The region is also home to reservations, including White Earth and Leech Lake, as well as thousands of acres of treaty territory.
Well, I'm Michael Dollar, Gequakey Gobble, like I prefer, and I come from the Eagle Clan right here on the White Earth Reserve. This is where I come from. And 2 years ago, almost three now, we got word that Enbridge wanted to place a pipeline within our reservation, within our treaty, another one, and it would clip the northwest shore of Upper Rice Lake in Clearwater County. That's when I got on the ground, my hands dirty, and got involved, because that rice, Upper and Lower Rice Lake, is what we call the mother lode of rice. I mean, every indigenous person who has ever riced has some sort of connect to those lakes. And knowing that that was going to be placed in jeopardy really kicked me into gear. We can't allow anymore. We just can't. We can't allow this to impact our people, especially when it's running right next to the very biggest Manoman lakes in the world.
For Dahl and his community, it's not just about protecting the environment. To them, the construction of a pipeline through their treaty lands poses a direct threat to those treaties and what they protect.
This new pipeline proposal coming through the 55 treaty territory, it's posing a threat now to our very first gathering, the Manoman, or our rice. So that's where our treaty issues and our sovereignty, it's not really about being sovereignty, it's about exercising our sovereignty. That we have the right to say, due to our treaty laws and our treaty agreements with the United States of America, not with the state of Minnesota, that we should be consulted from the beginning of this process. And that's not happening. They're not to move. They're not to do anything until they consult with us.
Sandra Skinaway, chairwoman of the Sandy Lake Band of Mississippi Chippewa, located east of White Earth, and her sister Jean, also worry about the environmental downsides of the pipeline.
Our main concern is about the wild rice beds. Through our area here, it's full of wild rice beds everywhere. And that happens to be the Ojibwe people's lifeblood. I mean, we use it, we eat it. We also use it to barter, and we also use it to, you know, for economic, you know, to buy school clothes for the kids, or we also sell some of it. It's always been led that way for centuries.
Here's Jean Skinaway.
The migration story of how the Anishinaabe were supposed to go to where the food grows on water. We're supposed to, and that's what we did. You know, we migrated west from our original lands, eastern Great Lakes area, in which we migrated west, and we came to where food grows on water, and that's the Manoman. You know, that's sacred to us, and that's what, you know, we always want to protect. There's been no consultation whatsoever from actual Enbridge to the tribal governments.
Again, Sandra Skinaway.
Now, we were guaranteed the rights to hunt, fish, and gather, and these treaties have reserved those for us, you know, since we ceded millions of acres of land. And in doing so, the United States legally is responsible for the protection of tribal lands, assets, resources, and treaty rights. Now, they have a federal trust responsibility to keep these protected for us. You know, the risk to our ceded territories, it will affect our hunting, fishing, and gathering rights if this pipeline was to come through.
In the meantime, Richard Smith, Sandra Skinaway, and the others are hoping that government agencies reroute the Sandpiper. Sandra Skinaway.
The Friends of the Headwaters, they have a route comparison map, and it shows a few other alternative routes that Enbridge could take to implement their pipeline that would be free from the sensitive areas where our wild rice grows.
Again, Richard Smith.
All these decisions should be made not from the perspective of what's good for Enbridge. It should be made from what's the state of Minnesota's interest in this. Do we risk the long-term economic interest of a region for short-term economic gain of construction?
In addition to a rerouting of the project, opponents want another environmental study. Again, Paul Stolen.
The emphasis should be we have to have better information on these enormous projects. And we have to have a pause and look at this objectively rather than letting Enbridge drive the ship.
Overall, everyone I spoke with for this story reiterated that regardless of what happens with the pipeline, protecting the lands and waters of northern Minnesota is crucial. Michael Dahl.
These trees out here, they don't need me. They don't need me to live. But I need them. That lake out there, it don't need me to live. But I need it. The sun, it don't need me. None of this, nothing on this earth and its existence is reliant on me. But my whole existence on this earth is reliant on them. But here we sit now, especially as Ojibwe people, our rice, our manomen, is the very reason that we even came here from the East Coast. It's the very reason that we came here. If that rice dies, we die, and we'll be nothing but a mascot anyway.
You've been listening to Sandpiper, how grassroots efforts in the Northwoods are taking on an oil giant. For KFAI, I'm Kelly Schoenfelder. Funding for Miniculture on KFAI is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.